The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
New details reveal the National School Board Association planned to ask the White House for military deployment to monitor parents at school board meetings. The September 2021 draft reads, "We ask that the Army National Guard and its military police be deployed to certain school districts and related events where students and school personnel have been subjected to acts and threats of violence."
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
What country is that? China? I mean, really? The United States of America? You're going to deploy the National Guard for parents? When I first heard that story, I thought it was old. I really did. Remember last fall when the National Association of School Boards sent a letter to the White House asking for, you know, they wanted federal help in dealing with parents who were suddenly showing up at school boards and they were getting all feisty? Well, within about 3 days of that letter being sent out to the Justice Department, they responded saying, they're going to put the FBI onto this and start investigating those parents, who they were. Well, that didn't go over very well with the parents. And, of course, some journalists did their job, and they started to dig into it. Now, at first, almost no one heard of the National Association of School Boards, the NASB, right? Everyone knows the National Education Association, the NEA, and the American, you know, the American Federation of Teachers, but the NASB, it was new, really, to most people. So second, why did it take the Justice Department, right? Why did it take them only a few days to respond to their request when, if you think about it, all those other requests, it takes weeks, it takes months to get responses. So that digging found out that there had been collusion. That's a familiar word, right? Collusion between the White House and the NASB. The White House didn't like the parents taking back control of school boards. They didn't like it. So what did they do? They recruited the NASB because they aren't as well known as others. They figured that that would raise less suspicion. But the journalists who were looking at this also found that the Justice Department was colluding as well. And the reason their response was so quick is because, you know, they not only knew about it, they helped to write it. They helped to write it. Now, one other thing, something else here came to light about this incident. Earlier drafts of the NASB, that letter, it shows that the association wanted the White House to activate the National Guard, to get the military police involved. In doing what? Well, supposedly protecting the school boards from angry parents. Now, I sit back here and I'm thinking, you want to get the military. You want to get the military police and the National Guard involved for parents who are saying, what are you teaching my kid? Right? What? You want to indoctrinate my first grader or my second grader with this gender ideology? You want them to use the proper pronoun? Parents are saying, what are you teaching? Right? Parents have a right. They're the primary educators of their kids. It's not the school. Right? So they're up in arms, and all of a sudden, the White House doesn't like, you know, the opposition to their radical agenda. So they want to send in the military? They want to send in the National Guard, the military police? Yeah, I sat today, I was driving to my studio, and I thought, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I mean, look what's happening with the Supreme Court justices of this nation. I don't see the National Guard out there protecting them, right, when there's threats of taking their lives and who knows what else. I mean, their homes are within, you know, reach of somebody throwing a rock or something through their window, Molotov cocktails, who knows? I don't know what kind of crazy or wacko is going to be out there that's going to do something along those lines. I don't see the White House defending them, right? But you want to activate the National Guard, and you want military police there to tell parents to pipe down. I mean, it really is ridiculous. To me, it's ridiculous. It is. But maybe it was a good thing. You know, maybe a good thing for their reputation. The Justice Department got involved to help them tone the letter down. So we'll see where all this goes. I'm joined today by James Herson. He's a New York Times bestselling author, a commentator, news analyst, a law professor, a longtime contributor to this show. If you want some insight, check out Newsmax.com. He writes the Left Coast Report. He wrote a column for Newsmax there, and he covers everything from Hollywood and politics and entertainment to culture. And you can check him out there, or jamesherson.com, or on Twitter, at the Jim Jams. That's his Twitter handle, at the Jim Jams. Hey, Jim, good to have you back.
Oh, good to be with you, Drew. Thank you for covering this. This is so important because it's a people have scandal fatigue, but this is a very, very important scandal. You mentioned that there's a good side to it. I'll tell you what the good side is. It showed that moms and dads across this country have power, because this National School Board Association, and people never heard of them until this happened. It's really an association of associations. The state school board associations constitute the members. And moms and dads across this country were so outraged, they told their representatives and they called these state boards associations, and many of them quit the National School Boards Association. They have a competitive, another association like this. And that pressured, I believe, the association to do their own internal investigation. And at the end of the day, after they did the internal investigation, number one, they said that the letter did not reflect their own opinions. They actually have apologized twice about this letter. But based on the outcome of this investigation, it shows that a high-level White House advisor basically colluded with the drafter of this letter ahead of time. He started contacting the then head of the National School Board Association, started contacting the White House 8 days before his letter became public, and that a senior person in the White House coordinated with the head of this school board association to basically have a letter sent to their own Justice Department asking for counterterrorism laws and the Patriot Act. Remember, the Patriot Act was passed after 9/11, after thousands of people had died. It was set up for us to fight against international terrorism. They explicitly ask for the Patriot Act to be used against parents, people who had legitimate complaints, who were exercising their constitutional rights at school board meetings. This is truly, it's inexcusable. A senior White House advisor would collaborate on what went public, a request to use the Patriot Act against American families. I mean, this is, and it was clearly a political act by this administration that was, to a great extent, encouraged. And as you said, it's kind of like they're the co-authors of this letter, and people within the White House. And what was the purpose? It appears there's only one possible purpose. I mean, are they really going to go out and arrest parents? Are they going to call the National Guard on parents? What they wanted to do was scare parents, scare them away from their free speech rights, from their constitutional rights, so that they could no longer show up at these school board meetings. And because it was so effective, these YouTube videos went viral. They had power in the independent media and shows like yours, and they wanted it to be stopped, and that's why they colluded. But this is a scandal, and I really think it's something that's going to be another political issue in the upcoming midterms.
So let me, what's it speak to? I mean, the fact that you call out the military, police, and the National Guard. Is the ideology that this particular administration pushing, is it that important to them? I mean, it's so radical that you've got to shut parents down. I mean, we've got a school board association asking for military intervention in one of the most fundamental human freedoms, directing the education of our kids. To me, that's what you see in a military state, right? In a police state, not in the United States of America. And I don't know whether this is just an anomaly or what it is about this particular ideology that they would think that this was acceptable. I mean, why is this so important to them?
Well, it's obvious it has to do with their agenda. It has to do with an agenda that involves the teachers' unions and the National Association of Education, and that they're what parents were chiefly going to their school boards about is the fact that their kids were being taught things that are counter to their religious beliefs, their beliefs about the integrity of their family, the upbringing of their kids, and it was hidden from them. And of course, in many, perhaps the most viral video had to do with the bathroom policies of the school.
Yeah, right.
And a sexual assault against a young girl. And these are legitimate concerns, and the school board meetings are set up to allow parents to come in and comment. And in many cases, the parents were angry, and sometimes their anger went maybe over the top with some language, accusations against school board members. But for even the suggestion that somehow the Justice Department and Homeland Security and the Patriot Act and the National Guard could somehow be even, proposed to be used against parents speaking their mind at school board meetings, it takes really a sick kind of mind to come up with that.
Yeah, it does.
And this acting CEO, according to the report, he didn't properly get approval from the board of directors of that association. So this seems to be part of this kind of neoliberal agenda that we see, this over-the-top kind of agenda. And also in some school boards, they wanted to cover up the terrible effects of the policies that they had implemented, and they thought it would be a good idea. They would, as a matter of fact, local laws require the school boards to open up these school board meetings and have parental comment. I mean, and some of the members of the school boards, if they had their way, would shut it down completely. So they welcomed that idea.
Yeah.
And it's a question still of the report indicates definite coordination between the White House before this controversial letter was ever sent.
Right.
But there's a question of whether it was initiated, who initiated it in the first place. But the fact is, there's no doubt about it that it was encouraged by the White House, even to the point where the senior advisor talked to the head of the School Board Association and said,
wow,
tell us the specifics of what kinds of things the parents did. And the president, after the letter was sent, the president of the United States called one of the signers of this letter personally and ended up bringing them into the administration, giving them a job. And so this was obviously, it was encouraged, and certainly there was never any kind of contrition or any kind of apologies coming from the administration. We have now the association apologizing for the second time. They did back in October, and now they're apologizing again because their internal investigation has unearthed this material, and it's just coming out today. And it is a major, another in a series of scandals, but this one, to me, now is worse, because we knew the letter was outrageous. We knew when the Justice Department issued their memorandum it was outrageous. But now we have proof of the coordination and collusion, and that no one in the administration tried to stop this. It's an outrage.
Yeah, no kidding. Let's take a few calls for you, Jim. I only have a few minutes. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149. Speaking today with James Herson. If you want to get in, Taking a look at school boards and the National Guard and military police being called in, and Stan is listening in Northern Nevada. He served as a National Guard, served in the National Guard for 30 years, James. Stan, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Drew. Yes, I served in the National Guard in 30 years. I helped plan a lot of the emergencies. I was there for the L.A. riots and all the other emergencies. And the one constraint we have is that Posse Comitatus Act. The government would have to federalize the National Guard in order for them to do any police work. But what really disturbs me over time is that I have watched the National Guard is never intended to be this thing, military arm that the governors can use and abuse at will. It was always intended, if you read the writings of Thomas Paine, to be the unorganized militia that the federal government could call up for the collective defense of the nation, and that these governors could use for an insurrection, and this hardly constitutes that. And when I hear this, I think it's time for Congress to maybe to reform the National Guard and maybe stand it down and take away a lot of these programs, like their youth program. Even their programs like the Partnership for Peace and that have gotten out of hand, and they could save a lot of money, but they can get the militia discipline. There is a need to have a National Guard training because of the, you know, when we fought the Soviet Union, but that was a peace through strength force. And so they need to reform it now and pivot.
Hey, Stan, thanks for your service. And James, I'll let you respond as well.
Yes, that's what I was going to say, Stan. Thank you for your service. And look, this suggestion that the Army National Guard or the military police be deployed was actually in an early draft of the letter that came to light as a part of this internal investigation that the National School Board Association did. So that suggestion was removed. It wasn't in the final letter, and we don't know exactly who removed it.
Right.
It's hoped that there was some sane person on either side that said, hey, wait, this is over the top. But Stan's right. I mean, it's very obvious that the National Guard, the MPs that are in the National Guard, this is not supposed to be used for this purpose. And the Posse Comitatus Act that he refers to is to protect American citizens from the misuse of the military. And it's just this constant drumbeat about domestic terrorism and describing domestic terrorism as kind of ordinary working people. It's misplaced. It's wrong. And in this case, it seems to have driven the administration to engage in something that is truly outrageous. Now, to the extent, and we hear reports that there were some investigations conducted, and you know, we haven't heard, nobody's been, that I'm aware of, has actually been prosecuted or arrested or anything like that. But we may have a situation where civil rights have been violated here.
Yeah, that's true.
And that would be another in a series of additional blows to the scandal, you know, to make it the scandal even worse.
It's just shocking, you know, that you're talking about school boards, parents voicing their discontent or their concern about, you know, something that's being taught or, you know, being introduced into classrooms, and you've got to call in the National Guard and the military police because you see parents as domestic terrorists. That to me is a pretty big leap. And I think, you know, I'm sitting back here and I'm thinking how much, you know, this hasn't been reported very much in the mainstream media, as you pointed out. So if the shoe was on the other foot and some Republican association, right, some Republican organization was asking for military help, we wouldn't get this kind of silence. I'm sure the reaction would be, you know, quite reactive. But then, you know, take the school boards out and let's just take a look at what's happening here. You'll send the military in to school boards, but you got Supreme Court justices, you know, who, you know, are probably fearing for their safety. There's giant protests outside of their home. Somebody could throw, as I said, a Molotov cocktail or something through their windows. Who knows what could happen in a situation like that? And I don't see the National Guard going out there to protect them. there seems to be a disconnect there, Jim. Your thoughts? I have a few minutes.
Sure. It's a decline of morale and honor that unfortunately is in our society, but in our leaders, because even in the final draft, okay, the final draft did not contain the suggestion of using the National Guard, using the military police of the National Guard, but it did have in it specifically using the Patriot Act, mm-hmm. designed for international terrorists against American families. It's hard to imagine that there are people who have so much antipathy for ordinary moms and dads that they would want to sick, essentially, the powers of counterterrorism statutes on moms and dads.
Yep, yep.
It's a betrayal of trust, and it's at the highest level of American government. And we just, but I think it's going, like I say, I think it's a blessing that this association did this internal investigation, that these truths come out at a very important time politically, when we're engaged in primary elections and we're close to engaging in the midterm elections.
Amen to that. Hey, James, I only have a moment or two left. I want to change gears just for a moment, because I know you write about pop culture and a whole litany of other things. What's the fascination with Johnny Depp and Amber Heard and this trial? Have you been following that at all?
Just a little bit I have, and it's just, you know, I think it, Johnny Depp being this massive, well-known star and gone into a courtroom, he has a female lawyer that's representing him in a civil suit for defamation, for slander, and the chief witness is Amber Heard, another celebrity. So it's a part of it is the celebrity obsession, and the other part of it is this, complex personality of this talented actor who is not, you know, originally the story came out and it made people believe that Johnny Depp was this abuser. But what's happened in the trials, it keeps swinging back and forth, and it's a much more difficult and complicated story. But but the main thing is it's become the new OJ trial, where segments of it are shown either on the internet, on social media, even on lots of different media shows. And some of the testimony is very dramatic. These are dramatic people. And particularly, Johnny Depp is alleged to have some sort of a relationship with his lawyer, who is a young woman, and she's very good, and she's been grilling Amber Heard in cross-examination. And they're going to make this into a TV movie for sure.
I was wondering, a lot of media on the trial, a lot going on. Jim, always good to have you here. Thank you for your time. I'm grateful for it.
Well, thank you, Drew.
I know I want people to follow you at your Twitter handle. It's at the Jim Jams. At the Jim Jams. Follow James on Twitter. You can also just get him at James Hirsen. That's H-I-R-S-E-N. H-I-R-S-E-N.com. Read him at Newsmax.com, too. He writes for the Left Coast Reporter. Writes the Left Coast Report column. Hey, Jim, we'll talk soon. God bless you, brother.
All right. God bless you, Drew.
Thank you. Well, good to have him. When we return, I'll give you a live report, as you might have heard. 14 students killed, one teacher dead at an elementary school in Texas. I'll bring you up to speed on all the details. We receive hundreds of your phone calls every day, all thanks to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line. Our sponsor offers flexible life insurance and annuities. Visit relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show. The Drew Mariani Show. On Relevant Radio.
Yeah, coming up in a few moments, we'll talk about environmental social credit scores. We came across my radar in a conversation not too long ago. It's something I want to put on your radar. And we talk about social credit scores in China. This is an interesting development stateside. But there's big news. During the broadcast today, several people have reached out to me to pray for a school shooting in Texas. And moments ago, my former colleague here, John Harper, and you often hear him sitting in for me here on the show, made me aware of the latest. He's been feeding me a lot of information. The fact now that 14 students have been killed and one teacher is now dead. The governor of the state of Texas just addressed the media. And John joins me today to bring you up to speed on the latest. What's happened down there, what's now unfolding, what the governor, Governor Abbott, had to say, and more. John, thank you for keeping me abreast of what's happening while the broadcast was live here. And I was preoccupied. I'm grateful for your contribution.
Sure, Drew. And just a little over a week after that tragic shooting at the supermarket in Buffalo, we have another mass shooting to talk about. This is in a community that's about 60 miles west of San Antonio, Uvalde, Texas, a community of about 15,000 people. Gunman, 18-year-old high school student at Uvalde High School, who's been identified by Governor Abbott, and you'll hear that in just a couple of seconds, is the apparent shooter in this elementary school. Robb Elementary School is the name of the school, and here's what the governor said within the last hour.
First, I want to tell you that what happened in Uvalde is a horrific tragedy that cannot be tolerated in the state of Texas. And there is swift action being taken by local law enforcement as well as the Texas Department of Public Safety. They obviously now know who the shooter was, and the shooter is no longer alive. Let me give you some details, and then I'll give you a summation about that. The shooter was Salvador Romas, an 18-year-old male who resided in Uvalde. It's believed that he abandoned his vehicle and entered into the Robb Elementary School in Uvalde with a handgun, and he may have also had a rifle, but that is not yet confirmed according to my most recent report. He shot and killed horrifically, incomprehensibly, 14 students and killed a teacher. Mr. Romas, the shooter, he himself is deceased. And is believed that responding officers killed him. It appears that two responding officers were struck by rounds, but have no serious injuries. The Uvalde Consolidated Independent School District Police Department is the investigating agency, and we will provide them and the city of Uvalde substantial investigative and patrol assistance. We're in the process of obtaining detailed background information on the subject, his motive, the types of weapons used, the legal authority to possess them, and conduct a comprehensive crime scene investigation and reconstruction, and identify and interview all witnesses and provide victim services and other support as needed. Victor Escalon is the Texas Department of Public Safety's South Texas Regional Director. He is on the scene, and everything that can be done will be done. In addition to that, it is being reported that the subject shot his grandmother right before he went into the school. And I have no further information about the connection between those two shootings. And the subject is reported to be a student, to have been a student at Uvalde High School, and is a U.S. citizen. Bottom line is this, however, and that is, when parents drop their kids off at school, they have every expectation to know that they're going to be able to pick their child up when that school day ends. And there are families who are in mourning right now, and the state of Texas is in mourning with them for the reality that these parents are not going to be able to pick up their children. Our job is multifold. First, to make sure we address exactly what happened at this crime scene, and then second, to make sure we take that information and do everything that is necessary to ensure that crime scenes like this are not going to be repeated in the future, and that we're going to be able to ensure the safety and security of our schools. I'll be happy to take any follow-up question about that that they may have.
And that's Governor Greg Abbott of Texas. The news conference within the last hour, that mass shooting leaving 14 elementary school students dead, one teacher. Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas, which is about 60 miles west of San Antonio. And one of the reporters from one of the San Antonio television stations, Victoria De Leon from KENS-TV, was one of the first on the scene.
We've heard several stories from families and parents. Henry Ramos spoke to one grandmother who said that her fourth grade grandchild, who's just 9 years old, his father heard about the situation, ran to the school, knew which classroom his son was in, broke a window, pulled his son and several other children out of a window, and then they hid at a nearby funeral home.
And Drew, I'm sure we'll hear more stories of like that one, which is just, you know, very compelling. A dad breaking a window. He knew which classroom his son was in, wow, and rescuing so many students. What was interesting about the comments that Governor Abbott made is that Salvatore Ramos, the gunman who was killed in an exchange of fire with police officers, had first killed his grandmother and then went to school and to do the shooting. It's reminiscent of just 10 years ago this December. Adam Lanza in the Newtown school shooting shot and killed his mother, then went to Newtown Elementary School for that massacre that we know happened. And the 10th anniversary of that is coming up this coming December.
Wow, too many school shootings, Joe. Too many shootings,
right,
in general.
Too many mass shootings as well. By the way, President Biden will address the nation on this sometime this evening.
Yeah, if I'm correct, I think this is perhaps this massacre in May, in which, again, 14 children have been killed and a school teacher. I think there's some people in the hospital right now, too, is going to be perhaps the deadliest mass shooting in the United States so far this year. And as you point out, John, it happened just 10 days after people were shot and killed in a supermarket in Buffalo. I mean, you send your kids to school, you expect them to come home. You go shopping for your eggs and milk, you expect your spouse or your loved one to return home. Another incredible tragedy. John, thank you for your reporting. Thanks for your support of the show. I'm very grateful for it. If anything else develops, please let us know.
Okay? We'll let you know, Drew. Thank you.
Thank you. That's John Harper. Say a prayer for him. And, of course, you can hear him here often when I step away from the mic. John is the great voice behind the microphone here, doing a fantastic job. Gun violence, it's an issue we should talk about. There was a nonprofit that I was reading a little bit earlier today, 215 such shootings. You know, and a mass shooting, I think, is defined by four or more people, you know, being shot. The group, this group, the Gun Violence Archive, they recorded last year 693 mass shootings. Now, it sounds crazy, right? Because we think of these stories, like the woman that just went down, or, you know, the Adam Lanza, or you know, the Boston Marathon. I mean, these big things that take place, they stand out anyway. 215 such shootings in 1 year. And again, the definition is, you know, four or more people were killed or injured. So there's been 215 of those from the start of January through mid-May. And of those shootings, nine involved four or more fatalities. So really quite a great tragedy. So let's pray for the mothers and the fathers and the siblings and so many people today who will mourn what is just unconscionable. I mean, children, 14 children in an elementary school, and that school teacher in Uvalde, Texas, today dead. As John points out, if you're not familiar with where that's located, that's about an hour and a half west of San Antonio, Texas. So our prayers go out with him. Hey, when we return, we'll change gears. I'll continue to keep abreast of this, and there'll be much more reporting, I'm sure, in the days ahead. More stories coming. But again, my thanks to John Harper. Yeah, you know, I was talking on the air not too long ago about social credit scores, and it's something that, you know, China has implemented, and there's talk that we might see some of that begin to happen in the United States. And look, this is the land of the free, right? We cherish our freedoms and our privacy. Privacy, as Dr. Ann Cavoukian often says, is the foundation of freedom. Some years ago, there was a move towards what's known as socially responsible investing, and people started investing in companies that they saw as acting in a socially responsible way. Actually, there were some Catholic groups doing something similar. So you've got groups like Ave Maria Funds, which invest in companies that are in compliance with the teachings of the church, especially in the areas of marriage and family life. And of course, I don't know about you, we don't necessarily want to invest in a company that's going to be dumping, you know, toxic chemicals in the rivers or lakes, right? I was always surprised when, I don't know if I never saw footage of it, I should probably try and take a look at this, when you get a fire on Lake Erie, You know, it was so polluted. Lake Erie was so polluted. You know, you get toxic dumps like Love Canal. You know, you also don't want to invest in a company that exploits the poor. You know, you've heard stories of the blood diamonds or, you know, so many of the other areas where children are being exploited. It's actually terrible. But when we come back, I want to talk about the fine line that companies are now going to face, between socially responsible investing and something that's called ESG, environmental social governance. All right. When we come back, Professor Bob Kennedy will be joining me. We'll talk to him. And you're more than welcome to join me as well. I know a lot of people have been up to speed on this. It came as news to me not too long ago. But I'll fill you in on what we found here at the Drew Mariani Show. We'll dive into ESGs, those environmental scores that we might be seeing here in the States. Stay with me.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and at relevantradio.com. Prayer, not panic.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Tesla loses spot on S&P ESG index while the oil company Exxon gets ranked in the top 10 globally. ESG applies non-financial factors which fall into environmental, social, and governance categories. And the problem with these factors is it seems like they come straight from the leftist agenda. Here are a few of the factors considered: climate change and carbon emissions, gender and diversity, board composition, political contributions.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That was Greg Leopold giving you a little breakdown of what rules the environmental credit score system. If you're just joining me, I want to talk about it. It's new to me, to be honest with you. I was not totally up to speed on this issue until a couple of weeks ago when I had a conversation. Actually, a caller came in and raised this question. And what I've learned, and we'll learn more from Professor Kennedy in a minute here, over the last 5 years or so, we've moved from socially responsible investing, right? And that's a good thing, to something called ESG, environmental, social, and governance issues, right? Investors, business owners, employees, they're now all expected to be concerned about those three things, which might all sound good, but the problem is they're often driven by whatever the current trend is, right? So you've got like an example, like State Farm telling its Florida agents, right, to send LGBT books written for five-year-olds to schools and elementary centers. As this soundbite, as you heard Greg Leopold say, it comes right out of the left. It can be a very liberal agenda. I don't know. State Farm sending, you know, books to five-year-olds. You know, it's really? You've got Disney selling rainbow and gay-themed books for babies and kids, as well as opposing the Florida law that recognizes, you know, parental rights when it comes to education. Look, the list goes on. We've talked about this before. Interestingly, there's now pushback against this. After that whole David Chappelle dust-up, you know, Netflix, they came out. They told their employees that they're going to have to work on some projects that are going to make them feel uncomfortable, right? Plus, the state of Florida passed a law removing Disney sovereignty. Remember that? From its territory in Orlando over their opposition to parental rights laws. There was a war. Disney took on the state. That was a major shot across the bow, I think, of a lot of other companies who might think, we got to be careful here. We got to toe the line. We can't push this agenda too hard. Dr. Kennedy joins me. He's a professor in the Department of Catholic Studies at the College of Business at the University of St. Thomas in St. Paul, Minnesota. And it's good to have him with us this afternoon. Doctor, thank you for your time. Welcome.
My pleasure to be here, Drew.
ESG, I don't know how much you knew about it. I mean, this was, as I said, relatively new to me. Can you maybe unpack it, explain it a little bit to those who are listening? What's the danger of it? Is there some good in it? What do you see here?
Well, it's a complicated thing, isn't it? But ESG is a derivative of the socially responsible investment movement. One of the problems with SRI is that there are no accepted definitions of what constitutes social responsibility. And we see something similar when we get to ESG. It's just an updated version of that. It tends to focus on probably environmental issues more than social issues and governance issues. And there are agencies that provide scores, as you call them, credit scores for corporations.
Right.
So, again, in principle, there's nothing wrong with protecting the environment. There's nothing wrong with paying attention to the impacts that your business operations have on the community. There's nothing wrong with governing the business well. But again, it comes down to the definitions.
You know, I would expect this from a place, if other places other than this country. And I don't know whether it's just a temporary thing based on the administration that we have in here, or whether this is now somehow become enculturated into the way business is going to be done. I mean, perhaps more fundamentally, yeah. I mean, what should businesses be doing? I mean, I think they should be involved in social improvement. They should make sure that the water's clean. They should, you know, there's some good in this. You know, what should investors be concerned about when it comes to this business? The old way of thinking was, it was that the company does what it's supposed to do and it makes money for the investors. Is that valid anymore?
Well, I think it is. But, for decades now, we've been hard on business, and the church has been hard on business. Mm-hmm. A profitable business is often been called a greedy business and so on and so on. So, you know, I don't think it's terribly surprising that business leaders have been educated and enculturated in a duty to be responsible for much more than the operations of their business. I don't think that's a particularly good thing because there's a lot of mischief that can take place as a result. I don't think that a business that provides products and services that genuinely address human needs, that provides good work for its employees and a fair return for its investors, has anything to apologize for. And I don't think it needs to take on social issues that are entirely outside its operations in order to justify its existence.
Are these boards, I just wonder about the management, some of the people who run these organizations. Do they think it's good business to go ahead and to, push the LGBT agenda or, some of this New Green Deal, some of the other things that, gives I guess their base pause. I don't understand why they think that's such a good idea. Are they beginning to recognize that this may be costing, like, for example, Netflix had a major exodus of viewers from its platform. Disney, at one point, there was a poll that was recently done that showed how loved it was as a company, and that has fallen precipitously. People don't like some of the policies of this company, and I think it's, if you are a shareholder, I think it's bad business.
Well, I think we're going to see more shareholder response to this, Drew. Even in the professional literature, finance professors and so on, there are more articles appearing that that demonstrate with evidence that companies that pursue these agendas, and more particularly asset managers that invest money on behalf of their clients in these agendas, are not doing as well as companies that stick to the knitting, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Now, again, we're not trying to justify companies that are indifferent to the pollution of the environment or don't care how their employees are treated or anything of that sort. That's wrong. But the real problem is that so many companies have been persuaded that in order to justify their business, they have to engage in these social issues. And I think we're seeing pushback from shareholders and from a variety of other points on the compass, customers, for example, and we may see some changes.
Yeah, again, and I'll go to the phones. If you want to join us, feel free to dial in 888-914-9149. I sit back and, as I said, this was new to me. You know, ESG, these ESG scores, what you buy, what you sell, what charities you support, your environmental impact, they're all being tracked. This is my understanding of it. And they're ultimately translated into a score. I don't know who the scorekeepers are. Assigns them a score? You know, and how does that affect your ability to borrow money or to do business?
Well, again, it's complicated. They're actually firms, Morningstar, Sustainalytics, and others, that gather information. And here again, the devil is in the definition. What information do they gather? How do they gather it? What is even accessible to them? And they provide scores, which some asset managers use to make determinations about what companies they'll invest in. A company whose investors are favorably disposed, a company where investors are buying their stock, finds it easier to acquire financing for their operations, for example. And as a consequence, a lot of companies have decided they can't be indifferent to these things. But again, this is changing. One of the largest, well, probably the largest asset manager in the world, BlackRock, recently said that they're going to be less aggressive about this, particularly in connection with energy as a consequence of the Russian-Ukrainian war and what they see to be the effects of that. So, again, we're going to see some pushback on this.
Well, let's grab a call or two. We only have a few minutes, and I'm grateful. My guest today, Dr. Bob Kennedy, if you want to get in, 888-914-9149. The Professor Mike in Denver has got a comment for you. Mike, hi, you're on the air with Dr. Kennedy.
Yes, hi, Drew. Thank you so much for taking my call. And I do want to echo what you said about the prayers being offered for the people in Texas. I'm sending my prayers as well for everyone there. Dr. Kennedy, thank you so much for your expertise on this. So the question I wanted to bring up with this social credit score idea, from what I've read, at least with the environmental social credit score, if the score is good, companies can be rewarded with Bitcoin. If it's negative, companies can be fined. So essentially, if companies are not meeting the goals of what the Biden administration deems is, you know, an appropriate level of carbon emissions, they can be fined. The question I really wanted to get your opinion on is, do you see this as kind of a step in the direction of a communistic approach?
Well, that's an interesting question. Thank you for the question. I think one of the things that we've seen in our culture over the last few decades is, as odd as this may sound, a movement away from politics in another direction. Politics in a democracy means persuasion, it means negotiation, it means compromise. And I think a lot of activists have decided that it's much easier to persuade a judge or to persuade a company CEO than to persuade a legislature. And so pressure is brought on these people to conform to whatever goals activists have.
It's a great point. My guest today, Dr. Robert Kennedy, I only have a few minutes left here. And before I go back to the phones, let me get your take, though, on where we go from here. I don't know whether this is going to be an issue. I don't know if most Americans know about it. As I said, it flew under my radar for a long time. Will these ESG goals, do they have tentacles? Will they be able to manipulate other parts of society, especially with social media companies and institutions like that?
I don't think it's going to go away soon. It's much more aggressive in Europe than it is in the United States. And we may see that coming here. You know, most investors, investors are institutional or they're private investors. And most private investors have little impact on the market. We buy mutual funds or other sorts of things, and we very, very rarely buy stock in companies directly. So the companies listen to the organizations that do buy stock directly. If the California Public Employees Retirement System, which is one of the huge investors, tells companies that they're really concerned about A, B, and C, companies have to pay attention. It's going to be around for a while.
All right. Well, Professor, I'm grateful for your time today. Thank you for allowing us to spend some time with you and tap into your expertise. I only have a minute left, but if there's a resource you want to drive people to, or if you want them to follow you, feel free to take that final moment.
Well, thanks. I don't have anything to suggest there, but it's always a pleasure to be with you, Drew.
All right, thank you. Good to talk to you. We'll talk again soon. It's Dr. Good. Bob Kennedy. Say a prayer for him. As I said, I am really out of time for the day. I only have about a minute left with you. I'll continue to follow this story. In the days ahead, I do want to talk about friendly brands being poisoned by politics, and it's not just Disney. There's a lot of others out there. And in the world of business, I think CEOs, those who run these corporations, have a lot to grapple with. I think there's a lot of lessons being learned right now. Cale Clark is coming up in a minute. Stay tuned to him. Of course, Father will be praying the rosary tonight at 7 p.m. Central Time. I hope you will stay tuned for that as well and pray. Pray especially for those 14 students and one teacher killed in Texas after a shooter opened fire on them. Let's pray for the soul of that shooter as well. Such a sad, sad story. I'll be back again tomorrow to give you a look at life you won't find anywhere else. Until then, say a prayer for me. I could use your prayers too, okay? Have a great day. May God continue to bless you.